I'm Charlie, I'm an addict.
Hey, Charlie.
Gary, thank you. Come and do a chair in Trafalgar Square on Friday night. I'm really impressed with this meeting. I mean, I've been around a while, and I'm one of those people who's just settled into a routine with my meetings. And I live in West London, and there's a lot of meetings around there. And I just go to, I have my home group there, and I go to meetings around there, and I don't really venture out much. And I have to say, it's quite intimidating. I'm finding this quite scary. And it's a really, really well-run meeting. I get the sense that there's serious business here, serious recovery. It feels really healthy and grown up. And I feel part of NA when I'm here. I'm a recovering addict, and am I among friends? I really need to be among friends tonight. I've been having quite a difficult time of it recently. I mean, just very locally, I'm involved in, I'm working just around the corner, and I'd slept more than 3 hours for the last four nights, so I'm a bit fuzzy. And if I can apologise in advance if I'm inarticulate or confused at any point. Everything feels really surreal and hyperreal, you know, when you haven't had enough sleep. I feel like I'm on a cross-channel ferry or something. I think it's the layout of the place where we're all about to spill out into France and get lost. I feel quite excited about that, actually. It's like quite a nice way to spend the evening. But I really, really need meetings at the moment. I really need to be around other recovering addicts. Generally, I come to meetings and I find them quite challenging. It's like looking in a mirror. And more often than not, I don't really like what I'm seeing. I feel challenged by what I hear in meetings. I often feel uncomfortable, and then I go through the process of appraising myself and reassuring myself and committing to development. And that's just a kind of process I go through almost every meeting. And it's not always an enjoyable one. But right now I'm finding meetings are a retreat for me. I don't want to go into it at all, but I'm in the process of rearranging. I've been married for 10 years. I'm in the process with my wife of rearranging that. We have two, the way we are together, and we have two young children, and it is without doubt the most challenging thing I've ever done in my life. I thought getting clean was growing up. I thought getting married was growing up. I thought being a parent was growing up. Getting unmarried is without doubt one of the most difficult and upsetting and challenging things I've done, and requires me to be more grown up than I could possibly imagine ever being. And I'm really having to dig deep in my program to get through it, and I'm hugely grateful to have NA at the moment. It's impossible for me to express how important the fellowship is to me. Right now, and it's really good to have that, to be focused on that, because as I said, I've been around for a while, and I mean, most of the time I'm in cruise control. I mean, thank you very much for your share, Tamsin. I identified with actually your pattern of relapse, because I've gone through three experiences like that, and I identified exactly with the cause, which was not going to meetings. And it's that simple for me. I've been through that three times, and on the back of serious recovery, in the sense of having years under my belt, and then easing off on meetings for a variety of reasons, some of which were the same as yours. And on each occasion, it resulted in isolation, forgetting how to ask for help. And being overwhelmed by not necessarily huge life problems, but just not being, reverting to type, reverting to form, which was to retreat and to isolate rather than to open up and go forward. And that's my natural centre of gravity, is to be on the margins. That's who I am, that's what I do. And that becomes more so when I'm in pain. And the consequence for me in recovery of being on the margins of recovery is that that process just, that gets its own life. And on three occasions that's resulted in relapse, and I feel really, really fortunate to be clean now as a consequence of that, because I have a lot of friends who have also done that and haven't made it back into recovery. And a lot of them with really serious consequences. So that's great. I mean, just to qualify very briefly, I'm an addict. I came across drugs at what was then a very early age, early teens. I found my drug of choice, which were opiates, very early. As soon as I opened that door, I walked into that room, and that was that. And it was, I think, in hindsight, looking back, my addiction was chronic from the beginning. There was no kind of introductory period. I discovered drugs. I felt like I'd come home, and that was that. And that was very different from my peers who I discovered drugs with. I stepped aside from everyone else. And I remember observing that at the time and thinking, this is interesting. I've got a different relationship with these chemicals to everyone else I'm using with. I was very pleased about that, actually, because I loved them. I feel really nervous. I'm getting a bit OCD about these periods. And the welcome ones are slightly off-centre now. And if I put them straight, maybe I'll feel less nervous for a bit. So tired. What's interesting about this working situation is that I'm with people. It's a very intense, it's a live event, and I'm with people who really, really care about it, and they're younger than me, and I'm like this grumpy older person in the corner. He's really not very impressed. And what it's showing me is that I used to be very workaholic in recovery, and I'm really not like that anymore. I was workaholic because it was a lot easier than working the steps. I think that's what it boils down to. And it's nice to be sitting in that sort of environment and realise that I'm not really like that anymore. And that my life is very broad and very full, and there's a lot of things in it that are very, very important to me. And none of them, I wouldn't really use the word indispensable, but none of them are necessarily dominant over the others. And that's a really nice thing. It's a nice thing to become aware of, that there's a sort of breadth and depth and balance to my life that really has never been present before. And that's particularly true in the context of what's going on in my personal life. I have, during this process I'm going through with my family, there's been the intimation of that sort of gaping loneliness, the potential for that gaping loneliness that I haven't experienced for a long, long time, and that was actually my daily experience when I was using. I'm touching the edges of that, and that's really scary. My using, yeah, it was banal. I mean, I spent every day organising enough currency to get enough to get stoned, so I could organise enough currency to get enough to get stoned, and they were small quantities. I was also one of those addicts that every hit was the last. I'm just going to have one more. And then I had this sort of pseudo-denial that wasn't total. I knew I was an addict, but I thought I could stop. And that went on for a decade, and it was grossly painful to go through that every single day. That failure to not use every single day broke my spirit. And it was deeply, deeply painful. And so by the time in my early 20s, I was, to coin a cliche, so I was faced with prison sentences, insanity, and actually what I was scared of, what I thought was the most likely reality, was suicide, because I couldn't face that failure, that constant failure, that I couldn't face surrendering completely to my addiction. And I was hugely lucky in a sense that on the periphery of my life, there are a couple of people who discovered NA, and I'd seen them come to NA meetings and get clean. Absurd proposition for me. Couldn't imagine how I was going to do that. But these guys had done it, so I pitched up at NA. And I started coming. I thought it was... It was the end of my world. It was the end of my life. However bad my using was, the idea of sitting in church halls at such a young age for the rest of my life with... I mean, these people who simultaneously, I thought they were just weird. And they really intimidated me at the same time. I felt very less than, but I also thought, I just don't want to be, you know, the conflict. Everyone knows what I mean about all those, that kind of flood of conflict in early recovery, all the different forces. And it was horribly painful. And there were beautiful moments, there were beautiful moments of realisation that I was like these people. They understood who I was, where I came from, and they had moved through something. And I couldn't see how they'd done it. I couldn't see what the process, how that was going to happen for me. But I spent some time going to meetings, like every day. I did 1990. And I followed the suggestions as far as I could. And after a while, I had days. And after a while, I had months. And after a while, I had years. And then I relapsed because I stopped going to meetings. And then I started the... Luckily, that relapse was only a couple of weeks long. And I started the process again. And my recovery... I don't know. It's been a process of small surrenders. And it's been... Those surrenders have ranged from... just getting fed up with myself in a particular sort of behaviour on a kind of, you know, small behaviour on a daily basis and stepping back from that and trying to do something about that, to being beaten, absolutely beaten and smashed by relapse. My last relapse, I was completely destroyed by it. Nothing particularly spectacular happened in respect to the drugs I used or the situations I found myself in. But it was spectacular in the sense of in the way it impacted my spiritual life. I hit a brick wall in a way I hadn't hit before spiritually, and I knew that I could go absolutely no further with using. And I was broken in a way I hadn't been before, and it wasn't a question of that I was ready to go to any lengths to recover. I had absolutely no choice. It wasn't a question of being ready. It was a question of that's just what I was doing now because I didn't have any other options. And it wasn't like I didn't volunteer for this, to be honest. This happened to me. I was brought here by my addiction, you know, and here I am. And it's fantastic, of course. I mean, more about that later. But that's how I got here. I was brought here. And last time round, which was 17 years ago, I arrived in meetings broken, spiritually broken. I mean, I'd lost all sorts of stuff. I'd lost, in that relapse, I lost jobs, relationships, all that sort of stuff. It didn't really matter. What I lost was my hope and my belief that I was going to be able to survive in some sense spiritually. And I found out that I couldn't. And so I came back to meetings and I sat there. And what became clear to me is my recovery lay in me just opening up and being honest. And it was going to be that simple. That what I had to do was what I hadn't really truly done before in meetings and within my kind of recovering society with myself, which was just be really honest about who I was. I mean, I think to a certain degree, it's not entirely completely true, but in my two previous recoveries, I had been very programmatic about it. These are the steps. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take it seriously. I'm going to work very hard on it. I'm going to get from A to B to C. I'm going to climb the ladder of recovery, and then it's going to be okay. and I'm going to work hard, and I'm going to apply. And if I don't get it, it doesn't matter, I'm still going to do it. And, you know, in a way, that's following the suggestions, right? This is what people say, fake it to make it, just turn up, just get on with it, just blah, 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 blah. So I did all that, I took that to heart. But it was a I was following a program. I wasn't living a program. It didn't really relate. I didn't really relate to it inside. I was applying myself to it, and it's a looking back, I had no power over that. That was just what was going on. That was the best I could do at the time. What enabled me to surrender truly was being beaten, and that I had no control over. That's something that happened. And so I came back to meetings, and I sat in meetings, and I just began to tell people who I was. And that was sharing in meetings. That was telling people the actual truth about my life. Not just bits of it. Not, you know, bits that made me sound quite good, and a little bit of the bad stuff just so I sounded quite real. Actually just going, here I am. And I really, really wanted to do it because I was desperate and I was really hurting and I was really lonely and I was really scared and I had to ask for help. And that process is what I do now. And that's where my recovery has happened. And it happens in the smallest possible ways. The smallest possible ways and the most consequential, the most significant. It's just about being prepared to be honest with people about who I am. And that's not just how I feel, but it's what I think and what I really... And it's about me being actually really vulnerable and upset quite a lot of the time and scared and soft and angry and aggressive and, you know, all that stuff, all the kind of messy stuff that makes me. I've just got to be able to tell people, and I want to tell people. And what I began to discover was, quite rapidly, if I showed people who I was, they were more interested in me than if I was gave them the edited version. They accepted who I was, which was a radical revelation. Because I was certain that who I really was unpleasant, uncool, undesirable, all that sort of stuff that we feel. That was definitely not the case. I found that out to be, it may be the case that I'm uncool and undesirable, but it wasn't the case that that's how people reacted to me when I told them who I was. They were interested, they found me... they wanted to get to know me better because I was like them, as I wanted to get to know them better when they showed me who they were because they were like me. And I discovered the process of socialization, for want of a better word, and I discovered that within NA. And the more I did that, the more I accepted myself, and the more I learned to just be okay with who I was. And the more I did that, the more I could expose, and so on and so forth. And it built up. And that's my process. That's how I got clean. That's how I stay clean, is by doing that. And I do that in a variety of ways, but the most obvious way is in meetings. I do that through the steps. And for me, I go in and out of focus with the steps. I go through phases of working very hard formally on the steps and then through phases of really stepping back from them. I'm in a bit of a stepping back, quite an extended stepping back period at the moment. But, you know, I've worked very, really hard on the steps, so it's okay. And at the moment, it feels like there are two really important steps for me, and it's where the action is for me. Three. Doing my step forwards was possibly a fulcrum point, a central point in my recovery because of that process, because it was concentrated exposure and analysis and appraisal of myself. And as part of that process of self-acceptance, it was a massive event. to be able to write down honestly who I was and share it with someone else and have them just listen to it and not flinch and not laugh. I'm not going to, like, turn away and identify and show me that they were the same. And that was a huge, that was a really, really consequential experience. And that's something I repeat more or less on a daily basis now through step 10. I need unravelling every day. By the end of each day, I'm usually quite messy. And I just, now most days I manage to find the time before I go to bed to sit down and just write it down. And I write it down in the format of a mini step four, what my resentment is. I think it's a very old-fashioned format now, but it's just the resentment, who I resent, why I resent them, and what the defect is. I don't really like that term. Shortcoming, defence. I see my defects as defences. And, you know, to be frank, I'm hugely defective. And I will only let go of those defects when I feel safe enough to do so. They're my protection. And that's okay. That's the way I get through my life. And I don't judge them or kind of grade them. That's what they are. And sometimes I need them, to be honest, because without them I wouldn't be able to cope. Dare I say that? Yes. It's true. Anyhow, yeah, so that's the format I use, and I find that if I do that, I wake up the next morning feeling somewhat fresher and freer than I would if I hadn't have done that the night before. I don't necessarily feel fresher and freer when I just the night before when I've written it, but I wake up, what I've observed over a couple of years of doing this is that the next morning I feel better. So step 10 has become really important in that respect, and it's kind of it's a fulcrum of my daily recovery. Step 11, step 3 in step 11, but now step 11, step 3, the process of coming to believe. Step 1, 2, 3. Let's get down to the basics. 1, 2, 3. Surrendering. I surrendered. It was done for me. It was taken care of at some point. I just gave up. Step 2. Came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I had no choice whether to believe that, really. And I could see, because of my experience of coming to meetings, I could see that that worked for other people. Yes, it was plain that I could be restored to sanity as other people have done so. I could see that in meetings, so I could accept that. I could believe that. I hadn't experienced it, but I could believe that that was possible. Step 3, it was really difficult. I had huge problems with God. I think like a lot of people, it was a really, really alien concept. I mean, I didn't actually understand what spirituality was, really, to be honest. This word, I didn't understand what the word meant. I remember someone asking me very early on, we were talking about spirituality, and I didn't know that it was really connected to God and stuff. I mean, you know, I didn't have the intellectual ability to get the concepts. So that was a bit of a barrier. And God was just like weird stuff for other people. And I struggled with it in previous recoveries. I struggled with it intellectually, and I thought about it a lot. And I thought that thinking about it and addressing it would help me develop a relationship with God. And it never really happened. I think, again, I was approaching it in a programmatic way rather than a pragmatic, real way. And it was a bugbear, and it was a problem, and I didn't like hearing about it in meetings. It alienated me. I felt angry about it because I wasn't sure what place that had in recovery or in my recovery. What I have discovered this time around is, as an extension of the process that I've been describing of self-acceptance, I began to accept my own world, my own reality. And I began to accept what was going on around me. And that began to feel like, I guess what happened was I began to get a sense of perspective on my world. And what was part of that was that I wasn't at the centre of things. And that the more I began to relate to other people and understand that I was like other people, the more I understood that we were part of a whole. And that developed, and that came through the kind of normal, kind of cliched, wasn't really awakenings, but just sort of growing, slowly growing realizations about things like nature. You know, walking out in nature and not being racked with self-obsession, fear, hate, all that stuff, and just being able to exhale out. And I think that's really, in those sort of moments, that's where step three began to work for me. Beyond being tied, beyond experiencing it through sharing in meetings and being, and having my faith in the process of recovery and believing in recovery, I began to actually feel something through those sorts of experiences. And that's just grown, and it's grown because I've moved away from wanting it and thinking about it. And I've now, I'm not really going to go into details, but I've now developed a practice that is based around meditation, which has become, it's a really central part of my recovery now. I nearly said it's become central to my life. It's become central to my recovery. That's what I mean. It's a point. It's something I've practiced, and it's taken hard work, and it's now something that I can, when I'm feeling messy and fractured, which is very often, I now have developed the technique to go to a place of stillness that brings me back to the centre of my recovery and the centre of my priority and the centre of my connectedness with everyone here in the fellowship, and expanded out to in the world, and to my concept of a higher power or God, for want of a better word, which is fairly broad and loose, my concept of God. It's not, I don't relate to an old man with a beard on a cloud who can intervene on my behalf. Doesn't add up to me, really. I have something not hugely distant from that, but different. That's something I practice on a daily basis, and that's huge for me now. And that's something I can rely on when I'm not with other recovering addicts or other people actually in my life who support me in my recovery and my spiritual growth. That's something I can do on my own, which is hugely, hugely valuable. I think what matters to me about that is that, I mean, the lesson in that for me is that that happened because I got out of the way and I stopped trying to make it happen. And again, whenever I think about the things that are successful in my recovery and in my life, it's that seems to be the common feature, is that I've stepped back and allowed something else to happen. I've allowed myself to be clean. I've allowed myself to let something other than me and what I want and what I think happen. And I think that's where it's at for me. How long have I done?
You've got about 8 minutes.
I've got about 8 minutes. Fantastic. I've made it. I hadn't done a 40-minute chair for about 20 years, I think. Gosh, that's amazing. I hope it hasn't been too repetitive or single topic, as it were. You know, I love NA. I love NA in a way that I take it so for granted now. I just pitch up once a week to my home group, and it's full of all my friends, and they've got a lot of experience and a lot of clean time. And I sit down and come. It's like sitting in a comfy armchair, and I just like sit there and let it wash over me. And to be honest, it's a really passive experience for me quite a lot of the time. And coming here tonight has shown me that, because I walk in here and there's people like, you know. Yeah. I don't really know anyone here. I know a few familiar faces. I know Gary, I know Paul, whatever. I know the odd person who's turned up at my home group. And it's really impressive and grown up and well organised. And it feels like there's something active going on here. And that's not something that's necessarily... I mean, right now I don't have any service positions. And that's partly of a function of being busy with my personal life and work and so forth, and which is fine because that goes in and out of focus. But what I feel right now is I've really, really got to get to more meetings like this, more big grown-up meetings that are moving forward rather than just sort of like hovering. Mm-hmm. And it's really impressive to be here. And Gary, thank you very much for asking me. I think I'll probably wind up a couple of minutes early, if that's right. Thank you very much, everyone, for being here. Thank you.